Hello, everybody. This is Jack Canfield. We are here with our monthly expert call for the month of November 2010, and for our Platinum Inner Circle Mastermind group and all the previous graduates. We have an amazing guest today, one of the people I love and admire and respect the most in this whole business of human potential, Dr. Joe Vitale. And I met Joe, I think we met in person the first time at a Bill Harris marketing retreat, and then we met on the Larry King show and sat next to each other at dinner afterwards after The Secret, and just is now a member of the Transformational Leadership Council. And I really love Joe a lot. He's just got more energy and creativity and curiosity to continue to learn and grow than almost anyone I've met. It's probably the only person I know that may have read more books than I have. And so I'm going to just give you a little bit of a formal introduction, and then we'll get started. Often Joe is called the world's first hypnotic marketer, does a lot of work in the marketing world, and is one of the greatest marketers of all time, writing and implementing record-breaking marketing strategies for himself and his trusted clients. And, you know, that's a part of Joe that I'm going to let you learn more about on his website. He's written tons of books in that arena, like Hypnotic Writing, Buying Trances, Adventures Within, Spiritual Marketing, on and on. The internet marketing machine, cash machine, whatever. But I'm more interested in Joe because of my interest in the world of human potential. And some of his books there are The Attractor Factor, Expect Miracles, The Key, The Missing Secret to Attracting Anything You Want, Zero Limits, The Secret Hawaiian System for Wealth, Health, Peace, and More, which is what we're going to be talking about mostly today, which is his work with Ho'oponopono. And we'll get into that in just a minute. He's written a book called Meet and Grow Rich, which is about masterminding. The Successful Coach, Life's Missing, I can't even read my own writing here, but just lots and lots of books. And I'm really excited about his work in Ho'oponopono because he presented about this at our last Transformational Leadership Council, and I think really blew the room away. And his work with Dr. Ihaleakala Hugh Len, who I had read about and heard about, and then Joe went and wrote a book about, you know, Ho'oponopono with him, and really just I've been using the work in my own work now, teaching it as well as, you know, in a very vague way, not nearly what Joe does, but just beginning to introduce people to it and sending them Joe's way. So we have a tremendous expert with us today, and I'll just share one last thing, and Joe, I'll ask you about this in a minute, but I'll have you tell your Rolls-Royce mastermind group story, because that also blew me away as you were talking about how you're allowing yourself to be guided and how that really makes a difference. So anyway, welcome, Joe. Glad to have you on the call. Thanks for joining us.
That's a wonderful introduction, and of course I'll be here. I love you, and I'd love to support what you're doing, so this is great for all of us. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So since we're going to focus today mostly on the Ho'oponopono work and whatever else comes up, let's start by telling people what that long word means, how you first heard about it, and how you got involved with it.
Well, Ho'oponopono, the first thing we should do is just forget saying it or trying to spell it, let alone trying to remember it. It's a Hawaiian healing methodology, and it's been one that's been secret for a very long time. It isn't like Huna, which has been written about quite a bit, and it's not really even related to Huna, except for the fact that it comes from Hawaii. And it is a system of forgiveness and clearing to get back to love as the source of everything. And I first heard about this, I don't know, 6 years ago at this point, 5 or 6 years ago, where a friend of mine told me about an unusual therapist who worked for a hospital for the mentally ill criminals. So this was a hospital for mentally insane criminals. And this therapist supposedly went there, used this bizarre Hawaiian healing technique called Ho'oponopono to help heal everybody in the ward, four floors of insane criminals. So when I first heard the story, I thought, yep, that's an urban legend. That can't be real. I know about magic. I know about miracles. I've written about healers. I've explored quite a bit of personal development and self-healing. But for a therapist to use some spooky thing I didn't know even how to spell, let alone pronounce, and heal all these throwaways, it just didn't seem real. So I dismissed the story for one entire year. I heard the story again 1 year later from the same person, and I said, okay, that does it. I got to go find out something. And we started researching, and it took me a while. Today you can find all about Ho'oponopono and Zero Limits and Dr. Hugh Len and who is the therapist. But at that point, there was very little information. It did take me quite a while to find him. And I did. The therapist's name is Dr. E. Haleakala Hu Len. And on my very first call, he said, just call me E. And I said, what? He said, don't even bother trying to say my name. Just say E. And so for the first few months of knowing him, I just referred to him as E, not knowing that, you know, I should refer to him as Dr. Hu Len. Anyway, I did ask him to explain the story to me. He said it was all true. He said that he did go to that hospital in Hawaii, which is a hospital for mentally ill criminals, and the hospital was desperate to have staff. The staff kept quitting. The doctors would quit. The nurses would quit. It was a despicable place. People were being either sedated or shackled that were there. It was a dark, gloomy experience, so they couldn't keep anybody. And they were willing to take anybody who was a professional, degreed therapist just to keep the funding going. So Dr. Hu Len said, I will go there, but I'm not going to see patients. I'm going to do my own little magic. And as he explained this to me, he would sit in his office, look at their files, and as he looked at their files, he would do this Ho'oponopono on himself. And as he did it on himself, all those patients slowly, not instantaneously, but slowly, started to get better. Now, I don't know where everybody's at when they hear this story, but when I first heard it, it was like, I want to believe this. I am curious beyond belief, but come on, give me more. What are you actually doing? And he said, all I'm actually doing and all I'm ever doing and what I'm doing right now as I talk to you, Joe, is clean and clear. Well, what does that mean? He would go on to say that everything that comes up in his being, everything that comes up as a emotional experience, everything that came up in him that he didn't like, that he thought was on the outside of the world, whether it was a mentally ill criminal or something he read in the newspaper, whatever he felt, whatever came up, he knew to clear that in him. He knew that that was not an issue with the other person, that was not an issue with the outside world, that was not an issue with whatever he read in the newspaper or saw on television. It was an issue with him. And he cleaned that feeling within him, and as he would do so, those other people would get better. Now, I'm going to pause here, Jack, just to see what you want me to explain, or you want me to keep going here?
No, keep going. You know, just get into it.
All right. Well, I'm getting into it, but I don't want to, you know, showboat this thing here. What I'm trying to say is that Dr. Hu Len explained in that very first phone call that all he's here to do is clean. As I explored what the cleaning meant, I got the understanding that he said everything that was showing up in his physical being, in his psychological state, if you will, was what needed to be cleaned. It wasn't the other person. It wasn't the mentally ill criminal. So I explored that, and I said, well, how is that actually working? How can you work on yourself and change these other people? And this is when he said the statement that so fried me that even today my mind has never reshaped itself to its former form, to its former original form. What he said was, have you heard the phrase, you create your own reality? Well, of course I've heard the phrase. I'm one of those who wrote about it and spout it and get on the stage and talk about it. And he went on to say, well, if you create your own reality and there in your reality is a mentally ill criminal, didn't you create that too? I'm pausing for dramatic emphasis here because when he said that, my world as I knew it ceased to be. I was turned inside out as I realized the quantum leap in responsibility that that statement really made. And I came to the conclusion at that point, on that very first phone call, even though I was still confused and I didn't really get it, I was beginning to understand that where he was coming from is a place of 100% responsibility for everything that occurred in his life. It didn't matter who said what, who did what, who drove off the road, what caused what. It didn't matter wherever you pointed your fingers, because it was all coming from within him. Was all coming from within me. So I became profoundly curious. I ended up going to the very next workshop he did, met him there, we hit it off, and of course we've done several workshops together, we've had several conferences together, we co-authored the book Zero Limits together, and I've been talking about this as much as I can with everybody. In essence, this is, I guess as a first principle, is all about total responsibility. And some people say it's not 100% responsibility in Ho'oponopono, it's 200%, because it feels like you're also responsible for anybody else you see in your reality. You're responsible for whatever they're saying or doing that's bothering you. That needs to be cleared within you. So the first step here seems to be that 100%, or semi-jokingly, 200% responsibility. And the second thing that's going on is the idea of this clearing. And when Dr. Hulen would talk to me about clearing, and I would say, well, what exactly are you doing? He'd say, all I'm doing is removing what's in the way between me and divinity. And divinity is his word that he still uses, and I think it's more politically correct to use that word. I use the word divine, because some people will say it's God, it's life, it's Tao, it's Gaia, but there's this larger energy field that we are of, we are actually it. And what he's trying to do is clean and clear the interference between him and that blanket connection, that divinity. That's what he's clearing. When I'd asked him, how are you clearing? He'd say, all I'm doing is saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. Well, that didn't help. When I first heard that, it didn't make any more sense to me. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. How does that help? And he went on to explain it's a type of mantra, it's a type of prayer, it's a type of petition. It's a way of opening a combination lock to clean that connection, that program that's in us, preventing us from feeling love. And as he went on and as I worked with him, I began to understand what he's really saying is, yes, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. But he's saying it for reasons. We're saying, I'm sorry for being unconscious to how I have co-created this reality. I've perceived a problem out there when it's really in me. Please forgive me for being unaware. Please forgive me for having this program within me. Then thank you is moving into a state of gratitude, but it's also with the understanding that the divine is going to help clean that program, that negativity, that limiting belief. You're saying, thank you for resolving this. Thank you for cleaning this. Thank you for clearing this. And then saying, I love you, and I love you is as close as we can get to experiencing the divine, because if there's any word to describe it, it's love. I think of the divine as love. But even as I say love, I've just now put a division between me and the divine with a word. But in order to communicate, we say, I love you, as a way to start to go closer to divinity. So nonstop, 24 hours a day, 24/7, however the phrase goes, Dr. Hulen spends his life cleaning. He has been doing it for 30 years. I have been doing it ever since I learned it, and that's what I've been teaching people to do, including at the last TLC meeting. It sounds so amazingly simple. I just say four phrases. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Yes. That's all you're doing is saying the four phrases. People often ask questions like, can you say them in any particular order? Absolutely. Say them whatever order feels right. I usually do. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. But I might mix them up myself. There is no rule about that. Some people will ask the question like, well, I don't feel sorry. I don't feel like I should say I'm sorry. I didn't do anything. My first response to that is, that's what you want to say you're sorry on, because you're unconscious to how you have participated in life to the extent that you don't even realize your hand in the web of creation. And I would start with that and say, I am sorry for even not understanding how life works. Please forgive me for being blind to this. Thank you for cleaning this up, and I love you, again, returning to that state of grace, that state of love. And I will pause to see what you think.
Well, no, I think it's. I've been doing this as well since I learned it from you, and I was watching a video of Dr. Hulen on YouTube, and he talked about when he walks into a room.
Yeah.
He knows that his presence is disturbing the balance that was in that room before he entered it.
Yes.
He says, "I'm sorry for creating this disturbance," and he's, can you go a little deeper with that?
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. I didn't know there was a video of him saying that. But in I think it was the very first workshop he and I did together, which was in Austin, he wanted to see the room before we actually did the event. He wanted to go there a couple of days beforehand. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm going to do whatever he wants. I'm taking care of the guy. I'm a chauffeur and so forth, and I'm glad to be here as a disciple, if you will. And the first thing he does is walk into the room, and he just stops. He stops because he's absorbing the energy of the room. He's kind of reading it. And what I concluded later from a conversation with him is that everything is alive, including that room, including the chairs in the room. And he looked at me and he said, this room's name is Sheila. Now, in the book Zero Limits, when I tell the story, I do it with a little tongue-in-cheek and I have a little fun with it. But because it's so unusual, I mean, how many speakers walk into the room and say, oh, this room is crowded and worn down and got a lot of energy in it and needs cleaned up and needs loved. And by the way, its name is Sheila. I don't know any professional speakers who do that. But he did that. And there was this sense of respect for the room. And when you think about it, the room is made of the same energy that's making up all of us. I mean, we've got elements it doesn't have, but at the same time, there's a life force there. And he's paying respect to the life force, right down to he stares at the carpet and he says, so many people have come through and walked through this room that their energy, their own sadness is still in this room. This room itself needs cleaned. So what did he and I do? Well, we are cleaning the room. And I don't mean with a vacuum. They've got vacuum people that are doing that every day. But I mean what we're doing is energetically sensing the room. And in those early days when we're doing things together, he would, you know, kind of coach me along by saying, what do you think the room is saying? What do you think the room wants? And what I noticed, first, how bizarre the question was, because I never paid attention to what a room needed. And then second, as I got quiet with that, I got deeper inside of myself to a connection with, I guess what I'll call the life force. Instead of having this type A, busy, 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 just kind of rolling through life or trucking through life or bulldozing my way through life, however you want to describe that, I'm suddenly standing in a room totally silent, listening to the energy of the room and tuning my ears to an inner wavelength to find out what does it need. That was a shift. That's a perception shift. That's a quantum shift. That's taking me inside myself, which is where Dr. Hulin wants, well, I don't know if he wants me or anybody to go there, because all he's really doing is working on himself. But that's where I was going there, and I felt guided to go there. And I think that's such a great story and metaphor for even this moment as we're talking about this. Because it seems like the more we tune in to paying attention to the fact that everything's alive, everything around us is alive, the room is alive, this room I'm in right now, beautiful room, it's a new room, it's my library now in my new office, and this feels wonderful, this feels really clean. But as I think back to that hotel room and the very first event, I thought, oh, there was a darkness and a heaviness, a cloudiness that needed cleaned. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things that he and I did together, cleaning a room.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I was in Bratislava, Slovakia, I think it was in May, sometime this summer, I was running a workshop, and my translator was from Prague, which is in Czechoslovakia, and he had just translated for Dr. Hulin. And they were out one night. I think he was there for a better part of a week, and they were out one night, and they witnessed an automobile accident. And they witnessed it happen right there, and the translator said, oh, we need to go help the people. And he said, no, they'll get plenty of help. I'm going to talk to the cars. And he said, nobody ever thinks about the poor cars in an accident. And he said, the cars are just as alive as the people. They have a consciousness. And so he started clearing for the cars.
I had never heard that story, but that is typical of him. And I think the deeper lesson here that may be new for a lot of people, but I love being reminded of it because it's my new quest, I guess. And this is to realize that it's all divinity, that this is all alive, but in the holiest of ways. Mm-hmm. And that I'm not just observing it. I am in communion with it. Mm-hmm. I am in relationship with it. And so it's everything. As I look around, I see some of my guitars. They're alive. These have personalities, if you will. They have energy, if you will. And I can imagine, I had seen a car accident in Poland, and I totally focused on the person because we saw it too, and there's a person laying there with blood coming out of their head. I focused on the person, even though I couldn't do anything, and I was with a doctor, so the doctor just went and did everything. It didn't occur to me to go and think about the car. I was, again, in a tunnel vision, And I think that's what happens to most of us, is that our egos are trying to still run the ship when that's impossible, but that's still trying to be happening.
You know, it's interesting. We're going to sound very woo-woo here, but in a moment we'll talk about how this has practically played out in your life, because I know you've had tremendous success with this.
Yeah.
And showed up in what people might normally call traditional success.
Hmm.
But I live in a place where there are lots of ants, and it just rained here for about a week, and so a lot of the ants decided to come inside where it's dry, which means into my house. And so the desk I work on, there's always ants that are crawling by occasionally. And every once in a while, I just get tired of them, and I squish them. And I try not to do that too often, but I do. And so this ant was walking across my desk, and because we're having this conversation, I looked at it, and I just did the cleaning with the ant, and the ant just walked away. Just walked off the desk.
Stories abound.
I love it. Anyway.
Well, yeah. there are real... I mean, that's real, but I mean, there's stories that the average person out there will sit up and take notice. Let me give you one from last night, and I know you want me to tell the Rolls Royce thing at some point here.
Yes, I do, but
go ahead. I was on the phone last night with a medical doctor who had read Zero Limits, and he had emailed me a couple times, and he wanted to talk to me, and I liked what he had to say, and I was curious about his work, so we made time last night. And when he went on to say that he had been in personal development and he was into health and fitness and he had been a wrestler and this, that, and the other. And he had an identical twin brother who got cancer and died a few months ago. And this turned my physician friend on the phone inside out in the most unpleasant way. His whole world collapsed. This was his identical twin brother. It's not just a family loss, but this is a part of him that maybe most of us can't even realize because we don't have twins. But he went through this inside-out dark night of the soul until he stumbled across Zero Limits. He started reading my book, which is the one co-authored with Dr. Hulan, and we talk about the four phrases, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And he started doing that, at first reluctantly and skeptically, because he thought, how is this, these four simple little phrases going to make any difference? How is this cleaning going to really help me? But he gushed his gratitude on the phone last night, saying it saved his life. He is now a beaming, happy soul who understands that the loss was okay. He's fine with it. He's made peace with it, the loss of his brother, and that he's back into his own flow of life, going forward, doing all the things that he loves to do. And this is the kind of thing I hear, not always with cancer, but I hear it from other places and other people. And in fact, we have a mutual friend, Jack, that's in TLC, and I can't think of her name right now. She works in the prisons.
Oh, Sherry Clark.
Yes, Sherry. And Sherry read Zero Limits, and she was teaching these phrases to prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her about this. I said, no, wait a minute. How do you round up people and teach them Ho'oponopono? And she says, I tell them it's meditation. So she's able to get them in a room and tell them it's meditation, but what she's teaching them are these four phrases. And she said one time there was a riot that broke out in the prison she was in, and everything was chaotic, and the warden was jumping around from room to room to check on different things. And when he got to her room, which had all the meditators in it, everybody was at peace, and they just looked at him, and he looked at the group and said, well, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Because they were clearly not in the same violent, chaotic, you know, mess that everybody else was in. So I keep hearing stories along these lines. Now, for me, I'm doing my best to just live in the moment and clean anything that shows up that's between me and the holiness of the moment. In other words, if there's a worry, if there's a concern, if there's a person, a place, a thing, whatever it happens to be, well, my job is to do what Dr. Hulan does all the time, clean. Just clean until that program is gone so I just see the divinity of this moment. Because when I'm in this moment and the divine and I are just more or less one, I have this life of magic and miracles that in the most bank account oriented way works wonders. One of my favorite stories, which I think is the one you want me to tell, is a couple years ago I was looking at a Bugatti Veyron, which is one of the fastest cars ever made in the world, well over $1 million some dollars, and It was outside of San Diego, and I never even thought I'd see one. But I went there. I got to see it. The salesman knew who I was. He let me start it up. And so I had my fun playing with that car. But along that, in that same car dealership, was this wonderful Rolls-Royce Phantom that seemed to be calling me. Seemed to be calling me. Sounds like a room, right? Seems to be calling me. So I'm paying attention, and I just go over to the car, and I walk around the car, and I've never seen a Rolls-Royce before, let alone a Rolls-Royce Phantom. Never been in one before, but again, it's the same salesman. He turns out he's read my book, so he's willing to give me keys. He's willing to drive me around. He's willing to for me to drive the car. And I drive the car, and I end up falling in love with the car. And here's where a magic moment happened. And all of these moments are magic. This moment is magic. They're always, each moment is magic. This one is a measurable one in terms of dollars. Because I'm walking around the car, and the doors are open, and I'm looking in the back seat of the Rolls-Royce Phantom, and I just kind of mumbled. I just kind of ad-libbed. I mean, inspiration made me say it. I said, this looks big enough to have a meeting in it. And I thought, I wonder if I really could have a meeting in it. And I started to let that just kind of incubate. I just kept cleaning on it to see where it would go. And I developed what was called the Rolls-Royce Mastermind. Now, you got to imagine at this time that I'm doing this, I hadn't even bought the car at that moment. I did end up buying the car, of course. And I have no knowledge of anybody doing meetings that are being paid for in the back of a Rolls-Royce. People have meetings in them, but not in the way that I was going to promote this. So I thought it through. I wrote up a sales letter, and I thought, what I'm going to do is invite two people, any two people from anywhere in the world, anybody on my list, two people can come and ride in the car with me. And what we would do is I'd pick them up at the airport. We'd go for an hour or so ride. We'd go and have dinner for 2 or 3 hours, and then we'd have another hour or so ride back. I'd be totally focused on those two people. We'd have a brainstorming, a mastermind session. And I thought, well, that might work. And then I thought, I wonder what I would charge. And again, inspiration, you just make these things up. I thought, well, how about $5,000 a person? Well, sounded like a good number to me. So I sent an email to my list saying, hey, Joe's announcing a Rolls-Royce Mastermind. I want two people. It's going to be $5,000 each. It's for one evening, 3 hours with me guaranteed. We might have fun and just keep it going for 5 or 6 hours. And sent it to my list. Jack, I've been doing those every month since I bought the car, which was a couple years ago. And last December, I was doing 2 or 3 a week. And people were flying in from Japan, Switzerland, Poland, Italy, I can't even, Russia. I can't even remember all the places in Canada, of course, and all places in the United States. And we have had an absolute blast. Right down to one time, Jennifer Nicole Lee, who's a world-famous fitness celebrity model, She wanted to be the only person in the car with me, besides my driver, and she paid $7,500 to ride around and me that evening, and ABC News filmed the entire evening. It went like 5 hours long. Now, where did all this come from? It came from being in the moment, cleaning, listening, receiving, and then, of course, acting on what I received. But it's ended up being this historic, one-of-a-kind type thing, a Rolls-Royce Mastermind.
So I want to back up a second and put this into context, because I think it needs some context for people to really get what you're saying. Because when I first heard the story, you were talking about this idea that you had this huge whiteboard, and you had put up all these ways that people could grow themselves, and we brainstormed for about 15, I mean, it seemed like 15 minutes, every possible thing from EST and Landmark and EFT, and there were thousands of techniques up there, and then little by little you kept erasing until there was nothing, and it said that's the space you want to be in, where you're open, where there's not all this, you know, interference between you and the source, love, God, and that Ho'oponopono was the way to do that. And then when you are open, because you have gotten rid of the static in the field, in a sense, in the unconscious mind, or at least I don't know if any of us have gotten rid of it, but we're lowering it, then you can start to hear these inspirations. Mm-hmm. Why I got interested in Ho'oponopono was because you and I, at one point, were, you know, into the whole law of attraction thing after, you know, The Secret, and the part that the Hyksos were teaching was, you know, basically ask and then release and then allow. Mm-hmm. And the allowing part is the part that most people seem to screw up on, in my experience. They get in the way with, you know, thoughts mm-hmm. and fears mm-hmm. and all the negative energy. And when you're in a space of love, in a space of joy, in a space of fun, as you've been, then what happens is these ideas come through. And as you said, and I'll let you talk about it for another minute, is you've got to be willing to act on the idea. And you instantly acted on that idea.
Yeah, and that's an important one. In fact, that's one I want to explain for a second. We're both big believers in action, and I've quoted you many times as the guy who says action is right in the word attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But I tell people there's a couple reasons why I take action. When people look and they say, Joe, how have you written 53 books? Well, the first thing that happens is that I'm in awe. I mean, how did I write 53 books? The reason I'm able to write 53 books is when an idea comes to me for a book project, I pretty much act on it right then and there. And there's two reasons why I do this, and these are the two reasons I want everybody to get. When the idea comes to you, it's coming to you as a gift. You didn't ask for it. You didn't earn it. You didn't pay for it. It's just this gift that's coming to you. So I want to honor the gift. As I honor that gift, I'm sending a signal back to the divine that I am a grateful soul. Keep these coming to me. And it's pretty much like if you are a grandparent or an uncle and you gave a grandson or a nephew or niece a gift and they seem to really love it and they gushed and so forth, you're probably going to give them more gifts. But if they seem really like, hey, I wanted something else, what are you giving me this for? You're probably not real inclined to give them anything real soon. So I'm giving my respect to the divine by saying thank you for my gift and keep them coming. This is a way of keeping that channel opening. And then the other reason that I act on ideas pretty quickly is that there's an energy that comes with the idea. And I think we all know this. We've got an idea for a product or a service or a song or whatever it happens to be, and we get excited. And that excitement we can use to implement the idea. I have told many people, you can write down your idea. That's great. But most people will say, I'll get to it later. Maybe they will. But when they get to it later, very often the energy that was with the original idea that gave birth in your brain is not there. Now it's a good idea and you want to do it, but you don't have the energy and the passion and the momentum to bring it to life. So yes, I'm a great believer in taking action, but I think this is all part of following what the divinity is giving us. Mm-hmm. I feel that the divine is sending us messages. We're sending messages to it and it's sending messages to us. But when it sends its message to us, it hits filters. It's hitting filters like, I'm not good enough, or I don't have the time, or I don't have the money, or I don't have the experience, or I don't have the education, or whatever it happens to be. Well, that deflects the gifts. The gifts are trying to come. So what I've been working on is just, well, back to Dr. Hulan and Ho'oponopono, being clear in the moment.
You know, it's so true, because when I look back at the three things that have probably propelled my life the most forward was they were gifts like that. They were inspirational mm-hmm. thoughts. I acted on them. One was Chicken Soup for the Soul, and we know what happened mm-hmm. there. The
yeah.
second one was creating the Transformational Leadership Council. And mm-hmm. the third one was when I was invited to bring Rhonda Byrne to the Transformational Leadership Council. She called up and said, can I come and film people there because you're all coagulated there?
Mm-hmm.
And my first response was, no, you're just going to mess up the space.
Right.
And that night I was meditating and I just got this resounding call her back and say yes.
Wow.
Which, you know, has been huge for myself and I'm sure for you as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
It just is a great example of the idea it's important to be open and clear, and this is one of the great ways to clear yourself.
I'm glad that you brought up the whiteboard image
mm-hmm.
because just for a second I just want people to visualize the whiteboard. I've been using that image because it's one we've all seen. We grew up with whiteboards or chalkboards or whatever. We've been using them in our dialogues, our conversations, our presentations. And when I began that talk at TLC, I made sure that the whiteboard was truly white. I had requested that there'd be a whiteboard there with nothing on it. And then I just took a moment to admire the whiteboard, which I'm hoping everybody's doing at this very moment in their mind, because the whiteboard had nothing on it. There's no thoughts, there's no words, there's no drawings, there's no cartoons, there's no blotches, there's no ink, there's no paint, there's not. It's white. It is clean. It is clear. It is peace. It is love. It is emptiness. And then, of course, what I did next and what you described was we started writing things on it, which is what we do with our programming. And a lot of our programming is unconscious. A lot of our programming is inherited. But what we want to keep doing is keep cleaning, because as we're cleaning, we are erasing all that programming, wherever it came from, even if we're not even aware of it, off the whiteboard, so that we can get right back to that place of divinity, love, peace, the whiteboard, which at that point, it's this whiteboard is alive. This whiteboard is going to give us gifts of inspiration. It may not be a Rolls-Royce mastermind for you. It might be something so much bigger than that, or something completely different, in different category. But the whiteboard image is really important to me, because that's kind of my walking meditation. Whenever something shows up in my life that seems like, oh, I didn't really care for that, my whole thought of, I didn't really care for that, is something I envision written on the whiteboard. I then envision wiping it away. And I take it a step further and envision the very thing that prompted my I didn't care for it, whatever that was, somebody said something, I read something, whatever it happens to be, that's on the whiteboard. Well, mentally wipe the whiteboard. This has been a powerful tool for me, and I'm sharing it so that people can kind of follow along in their imagination.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, because I, for years, was an educator training teachers in this kind of stuff to try to get this into public schools. And one of the activities of a guy named Jerry Jampolsky, I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Oh, of course, yes.
Called Love is Letting Go of Fear. Mm-hmm. And he was working in the Marin County schools, and he was helping kids learn to read. And they asked him, you know, would his techniques work? And in a really short way, what he did was he took these kids and had them do a visualization where they went into a movie theater, went up an elevator, went into the lobby, went over to a tub, pulled out their brain that was filled with gray matter everywhere because it was all this thought, so I can't read, reading's too hard, I'm stupid. And then to watch all of those go down the drain until their brain was nice and clean and white. So it reminded me of this metaphor of the whiteboard.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Then they put the brain back in their head, went into the movie theater, sat down, and watched a movie of them reading well, and put a new image in there. And then they go home, and they just do this visualization every day for 30 days. And at the end of 30 days, the average kid's reading scores had improved a year and a half. They didn't change the reading curriculum, the teacher behavior. Nothing changed, except they cleaned out the programming in the brain and allowed the natural divinity, you know, to come forward, to use the metaphor we're playing with here. So that's great. That just reminded me of that. It's cool.
Well, that is a great image, too, and I think that helps explain what we're talking about. I think just for a second, I wanted to make sure people understand that the programming we're talking about, for Dr. Hulan and Ho'oponopono, it's not just from this lifetime. He says we've got programming that has come through from generations past and all the way back to when we were amoeba or whatever we were in the beginning here.
Mm-hmm.
And with some of the science like epigenetics, it's saying that we've got DNA and programming that shows up in our body scientifically that are from our great-great-grandparents. And what we're cleaning is all of that. We're not aware of that deep sea of programming that's in the unconscious mind, and we don't need to be, not in terms of Zero Limits, Dr. Hulan, and Ho'oponopono. What we need to do, though, is clean. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. As a kind of nonstop process, and actually, Jack, for me, it's become my new self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
I've explained this in the past where people that are familiar with self-talk, it's, you know, it's to kind of put yourself down most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And as we learn in self-improvement and personal development, we create a different self-talk and we kind of bring ourselves up. But this healing self-talk, I'm just kind of inventing the term here, but this healing self-talk, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you, is now the background tape in my head. So that it's going on when I'm sleeping and it's going on as I'm talking to you or talking to anybody else. To the best of my ability, I just kind of notice it's there and encourage it to keep running. And I think that's a wonderful way to keep the nonstop cleaning going on 24 hours a day.
No, it's interesting. If you talk to anyone who's ever gone to India for, you know, a year or two of meditation, they tell you they get to a point where their mantra literally is running itself.
Yes.
Even while they're talking, even while they're cooking, even while they're sleeping. And it becomes the subtext of your life, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the Christians in the monasteries who used to continually meditate upon be still and know that I am God. And this idea of be still, subconscious mind.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. I think in a moment or two we'll open up to some questions. Let's just talk to people for a moment before we do that. about, you know, if someone's new to this and they're hearing it, and they're certainly kind of intriguing, obviously reading your book would be a good first step. But if they wanted to just get started right now, I mean, okay, I'm sitting here, I'm listening to all this, I'm intrigued, I'm willing to try it. What do I do on a practical level? Do I just take time and do it? Do I notice when I'm upset? Do I do it? Or how do I keep myself in the game? And what's the stimulation for getting myself into it?
Yeah. Well, what I would do is develop it as a trigger, meaning whenever something surfaces that you got upset about, and I don't mean you, Jack, but anybody at any time got upset, something was disturbing, you know, you're no longer feeling the peaceful, happy emotion that you might want to be feeling. You're now either in grief or anger or sadness or frustration or shame or any of these wide range of emotions are suddenly there. And you're looking out and you're going, oh, man, I'm feeling this way because of what I ate or because of my neighbor, because of my boss, my employer, my employees, the whole range of things. That's when you want to take a deep breath and say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Now, as you're saying this, there are some fine-tuning thoughts to keep in mind, and that's the idea that you are not saying it to anybody else. So in other words, if it is your spouse who set you off and there's a trigger that got pushed and a button and you're mad at your spouse, you're not saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, out loud to anybody, and you're certainly not saying it, even silently, to the other person. So who are you saying this to? You're saying these phrases to your connection to divinity. Now, that could be God, that can be Tao, that might be Buddha for somebody else, but you're saying it to the higher power. I even have thought that agnostics, even atheists, can say this because they can say it to nature. We do know that nature is growing everything around us, including ours. I'd say, okay, say I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, to nature. And if you want to take away all those words, because if you think of the whiteboard again, Buddha, God, and nature, and all these words I just said, those are words on the whiteboard. Those are words keeping us from the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. What I'd rather be attuned to is the whiteboard. And again, for me, the whiteboard is neutral because there's nothing on it. I haven't described it as anything. And once we do start describing it as things, that's when we're writing words on the whiteboard. So whenever something happens, I would take a deep breath. I would visualize that connection to divinity, whatever that means to you. And I'd be saying, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you to the divine. Trusting that it is going to help lighten the road and get rid of the program that's within you. And I guess another footnote to all of this is that if you feel a program or see a program in somebody else, you've got it too. Mm-hmm. That means if you can spot it in another, that spotting means you had to have it in you to be able to see it in the other person. So when you're cleaning, you're not cleaning the program in the other person. You're cleaning the program in you, the program that spotted it in the other person. Because we're all connected, as you clean that program in you, the other person who has the same program, it's not an intentional thing. They happen to have a program that they caught, like some people catch the flu or a cold or the sniffles. They caught a program. As you clean it in you, it gets cleaned in them. And that's why this work is so important. But those are a couple pointers, Jack, to answer your question.
Now, someone said the other day, if you can spot it, you got it.
Yes, that's it.
According to you, you caught it.
that's it. You know, I was on a radio show with Dr. Hu Len one time, and we were both taking calls, and there was somebody who called up, and he was angry, and the person was just frustrated, and the person was not respectful at all. And I was thinking, oh, my God, you're talking to Dr. Hu Len. Come on. Back off a little bit. Let's be polite, and you can ask your questions, and you can be negative if you like, but don't just rush him with a knife. And we went to a break, and I talked to Dr. Hu Len over the break where people couldn't hear us, and I said, man, I'm really sorry. I didn't know what kind of phone call we would be getting. I didn't know what kind of radio show this was, and I'm sorry for that person who just attacked you. And he said, it's not the person. It's the program the person has. And that hit me. It hit me as almost like looking at a person that's upset and you realize it's not the person that's upset. They got a program or a wiring or a belief structure that's caused them to respond in this way. It's almost like they're a robot or a machine and the switch got flipped.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was able to say it's not the person, it's the program, I could take a deep breath and go, oh, yeah, and I need to clean on that because I got upset.
Let me ask you one more question, then we'll open it up to the group for a few questions, and then we'll talk about resources you have and stuff. As I said, I went on a line and I watched, I don't know, 4 or 5 videos on YouTube of Dr. Hulem, and someone asked him a question, and he said, well, and I'm sure you've heard him say this, so you can expound on a little more. He said, if you had a computer and it was broken, where would you take it? And he said, well, to the computer store. And he says, well, good. Who made the computer? And he said, I didn't make you. I don't know the answer. You got to take it to God or source or divinity. I loved it because I make myself crazy once a month with these calls I do called Ask Jack. And I respond. I get 4,000 questions a month, and I pick some and answer them on the phone. I thought, well, I could at least get back 12 hours a month if I took on Hulem's idea here. But can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, he says that a lot. In fact, people have asked me, because they know he does workshops, and he and I have done 3 workshops together, and they will say, well, if the process is so simple and it's just I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, what happens over a 2-day workshop? What do you guys talk about? What is there to say? And I had to think about it for a minute. I thought, you know, he takes questions from everybody in the audience. We both do. We play off of each other, but I think I'm more the straight man here, and or the comic relief. I don't know what I am. And what he does is take questions from the audience, but his answers are always the same. In the very first seminar we did together, his answer was always, it's all bullshit. He just said that over and over, it's all bullshit. And at first he looked like a grumpy old guy. It's like, well, I guess he didn't want to be here. But he did want to be there. What he was telling us is that your questions are coming from your programming, which is a wonderful thing to say just before we open it up to people's questions. But he said the questions are coming from their programming. You know, the source itself, divinity, doesn't have any questions. It might give you an inspiration. You might make a comment. You might get up and do something. You might leave the room. You might go and bake your cake or whatever it is that you're inspired to do. But when people ask the same questions over and over again, it becomes obvious that they are coming from the programs about fear, about lack, about limitation, about not trusting life itself, about not trusting divinity. Another one of my favorite stories, if I can tell it real quick, and it is in the book Zero Limits, but it was when Dr. Hulem and I were here in my hometown area, and I live in the hill country of Texas, and it was on a Monday where almost every restaurant is closed because they're only open for weekend traffic, tourist traffic. So it's on a Monday, and I think one restaurant was open. It was called Burger Barn. And I never ate at Burger Barn because I was really watching what I ate. I didn't eat white flour. I wasn't going to eat a hamburger. I wasn't going to eat a greasy one at Burger Barn. And I shyly and reluctantly told him, I said, look, I know you want to eat, but the only place really open right now is this Burger Barn. And he got excited. He says, oh, I love burgers. And I said, you do? And he said, oh, yes, I have a chili dog almost every day, and I have a burger for lunch. And I was almost repulsed, if not got whiplash, because here I was on a health food kick, and I'm driving around this guy who I think is a holy man, and he's wanting a chili dog and a hamburger. And we went in, and he ordered, and so did I. And he said, it's not the hamburger that causes you any problems. It's not the chili dog. It's your beliefs. It's your programming about it. And he just said, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. And devoured his burger and loved it so much, he went in the back to look for the short order cook, who was perplexed because nobody ever goes back there except to complain. And this is an example. It all comes down to our relationship to everything else, and that relationship is in us. It's not with the other stuff. And what we're continuously doing is cleaning and clearing. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Now, you know, another person who teaches her own method of clearing, which is Byron Katie.
Yes.
When people go and do her one-month workshop, she makes all the vegetarians eat meat. You know, she's just with the same idea, like, how do you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a belief. And I know when I listen to CDs from the Hickses, you know, they talk about it. It's your beliefs about the food, not the food itself. Okay, promising we won't say bullshit. At least I won't.
We've said it enough.
We'll open it up to questions. So, Robert, if you'll remind people how to unmute themselves or if you want to just open the lines.
I'm dying to know if anyone's going to be willing to ask a question now.
Yeah, after that.
No, they will. Come on. You have permission.
The way to unmute is to press star 6. So So if anyone has a question, they can just press *6. That will unmute themselves. We have about, I think, 10 or 12 people on the call in addition to the three of us. And just tell us who you are and what your question is.
Hi, this is Pete Winarski.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Joe. Thank you. Joe, I just finished reading your book about 3 weeks ago, and it was absolutely amazing. So thank you for writing it and sharing this experience.
You're welcome, and thanks for acknowledging that. Thank you.
There's two questions that come to mind real quick, and one of those is the example that you were just sharing earlier about clearing on the car. You described that you had the Rolls-Royce and you had the idea, and somewhere, I forget exactly your wording, but you said, I began to clear on the car and I began to clear on the idea. What exactly are you doing or saying when you're cleaning on an idea that pops into mind and you're not sure what to do with it yet because it's, you know, the full inspiration hasn't been, you know, described to you yet?
So let me stop there before I get to your other question, because that's a great question. And here's the reality. When the inspiration came that I could actually have a meeting in the backseat of the car, that was clear. The idea to have the meeting was clear. What wasn't clear was all of my doubts, my reservations, my concerns, my fears about what my list would think when I went to them, whether this would actually work, would I feel like a failure if it didn't work, would I feel like a success if it did work. There were all kind of self-doubts and self-concerns that came up. In the raw inspiration of the moment, the idea was there, and if I had just said a great big yes to it, there wouldn't have been much more of a conversation, because I would have written the email, I would have sent it out, I would have gotten the results, and we would have been done. What I had to clean on were all of my questionings about the inspiration. That's what I was really working on, because the inspiration was there, but then I started to second-guess it, which is what a lot of us do. That slowed it down. Obviously, I got through it. I manifested, and I'm still doing Rolls-Royce Masterminds. But that's a wonderful question. Yeah, the inspiration was there, but I had doubts.
So would you say, I'm sorry for having this doubt. Please forgive me for being unaware of what causes the doubt?
That's a great question. I didn't specify, and I don't think I ever specify what the problem is. It's more a matter of I'm feeling it. So when I'm feeling the doubts, there's a certain heaviness to that. You know, you feel your energy is restricted, just like if it is with fear. So as I'm feeling it, I'll be thinking to myself as I communicate to the divine, I'm sorry. And I'm not filling in the blank, I'm sorry for how I'm feeling. I'm just sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you, as I'm feeling it. And as a footnote, I get the best results, the most obvious, measurable, these are the kind of things you can tell great stories about later results, when I really feel it. Just saying it on automatic as the self-talk I mentioned earlier to Jack, that's wonderful. I think there's background cleaning going on. But when I feel something and I focus on the feeling and say those statements, that's when I see it get swept away.
Okay, great. That does make sense. Thank you.
Great questions. Thank you.
The other question I'd like to ask, you had some conversation about the book, I think especially in the appendix, that was differentiating holding an intention versus just following inspiration.
Oh, you're good. You're picking out the highlights here.
I want answers, man.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, I was the guy that's told everybody you need to have intentions and get on soapboxes and talk about intentions. And now I say intentions are for wimps. Intentions are for wimps is my little code now, my little slogan. What I want is inspirations. Now, there's nothing wrong with an inspiration coming in, and it becomes your new intention. But too many people are just kind of like shopping out of the, I don't know what catalogs are out there, Sears catalog or Dillard's catalog or Tiffany's catalog, and they're letting their ego pick the way for them. And that's okay. I mean, there's stages of awakening, there's stages of development, and that's totally fine on that stage. But I have found that when I allow inspiration to just kind of pop into my awareness, man, I get the juiciest, biggest, better, most majestic, magical, marvelous things coming my way, and I can't stop them. So I want to be inspired. I don't want to just have intentions. Intentions, wonderful. They can help you get through the night, but inspirations will get you through your life.
So maybe the way that this is me not sure I'm ready to let go of intentions yet. So as you know, I go through a process where I'll hold my intention for the day, or I'll define an intention as I'm about to have an important meeting or a phone call or something along those lines. And I think what I'm hearing you say is it's not a bad thing to do that, but that could limit you if you're not opening yourself up to the full possibility of what could come.
And that's exactly it. I was on a radio show a few years ago, and this was after Zero Limits and everything, and they did what a lot of people do on self-development programs. They said, Joe, where do you want to be, you know, in 5 years from now? And typically I would have had some sort of answer for them, but I said, you know what? I don't have any clue, and I don't want to know right now because I don't want to put a limitation on what's possible. I might say, here's where I want to be in 5 years, and that's going to come from my ego's limited perspective of my past experience and education, where if I let go of that and allow the divine to inspire me, it might blow my socks off in the most amazing way. So I'm not going to go and put a limitation on there because I don't know what's available to me. But I want to be inspired and just follow those fireworks every moment all through my life.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And that to me is similar to the idea of affirmations and including or something better at the end of it.
Yes. Yep. That all works. Great questions. Great. You're very observant. Thank you for that.
Thank you for the compliment. Well, I appreciate you and your book and, you know, your work. So thank you for sharing tonight.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Karen Gridley.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I love this concept of the Ho'oponopono application to yourself. Mm-hmm. I've been blessed to experience Ho'oponopono in a group setting, and I just wondered if any thoughts of that, and then I have a question. And how I experienced it, I was part of it was called a passage, and in on Maui, and for women in the groups, and then there was a Ho'oponopono done with the group, and apparently Hawaiian tradition uses this in their family. I actually know somebody who, whenever there's unsettling or any kind of unrest in the family,
yeah.
They sit down and they do the family meeting. And the,
mm-hmm.
for the group concept, there
mm-hmm.
is there's three phases or levels to it. The first is that everybody goes around and just speaks their truth, whatever is their truth for them. And then the second level is to work through any breakdowns while taking ownership for, just as you were talking earlier about the 100% responsibility. And then the third level is that idea of forgiveness. And my understanding in the Hawaiian family tradition is that I've actually heard stories where people have gone on for days and weeks and other people bring them in food and stuff because nobody leaves once it's considered a very sacred space with that. And I just wondered, so I love this idea of being able to individually apply it to myself. And in fact, once you shared the mantra, I began saying it to myself just to kind of practice with it.
Good
know?
For you. Well, once again, I'm impressed with the question. Because I didn't see this coming. I didn't know that you would be this, the people on the call would be so well educated. So let me go and say something I don't always get to say. There are two forms of Ho'oponopono. The very first one, which is also an ancient one in Hawaiian culture, is the one you just described. And what they would do is use it as a conflict resolution exercise. Very often, almost always, it was done in a family, in the very way you were describing it. And that was known as Ho'oponopono for the longest time, and some people still practice it that way. However, when Morna Simeona, who was the teacher of Dr. Hulin, became enlightened, she taught the Ho'oponopono method of doing the very same thing you did in groups, but within yourself. The big difference was she saw that everything we saw on the outside, including those family members, weren't really on the outside. They're in relationship to us inside. And if we had to do any cleaning or clearing or forgiving or loving or everything, we didn't have to do it on the outside. We had to do it on the inside with, if you will, the parts of ourselves that those outer people represented. So the old form of Ho'oponopono, problem resolution, very often done in families, still done in Hawaii and some of the older cultures that know about it. But the new form of Ho'oponopono that Morna taught Dr. Hulin, and of course Dr. Hulin taught me, and which is described in Zero Limits, is this one where you don't need the outer family, that the outer family is actually in you, and you do everything inside you.
Yeah, and I love that because it just makes it, it's obviously personal, but it makes it where it brings it back instead of holding grudges or resentments mm-hmm. against other people. In fact, I recently had a situation in my personal life where this person really got under my skin and irritated me. And I had a chuckle at myself, and I says, that's exactly what I told myself. Well, Karen, if you're seeing that so clearly in her, that's probably because there's still a part of it in you. And until I'm going to work with this mantra too, but what I started doing was just saying, I just send love and healing to her heart. Now I can take it even another step deeper on myself to help that. But just doing that much helped to free me of the daggers that I was tempted to throw at somebody else, you know. And with that, a question about, you mentioned about applying this when a situation occurs that whether we're upset or any mm-hmm. kind of, say, negative. What about when you feel joy or enthusiasm? I mean, are you applying it that way as well?
What a beautiful question. My goodness, I'm smiling just to hear about this. You know,
because I have one more question for you after that.
Well, my short answer to that one is I don't really know. I hadn't thought about doing it on that. There are some people who say that great enthusiasm actually takes you away from the divine. I've heard that, but I've never bought it because great enthusiasm is really what I'm known for. That's where Mr. Fire comes from. That's where my ability to get so much done is happening. It's from my enthusiasm, from my passion, from my love. So I haven't done that, and I don't know what to say about that is my best answer, and I'll clean on it in case there's something else that shows up.
Okay. And my other question is, I love the clarification about the holding intention versus inspiration.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I totally love and get and appreciate with the inspiration. That's what I love. Here's my challenge I would love some guidance on, is that how to have the inspirations more consistent or regular as opposed to that, I'm not inspired, so I'll just wait for inspiration. And I know not to wait. I'm exaggerating for a point to make sure I get this, of how to, like, to have the inspirations more consistent or aware of them maybe more consistent.
Well, that is another wonderful question. So here's what comes to mind for me. What I hear is underlining your request is a fear that you won't have inspirations.
Okay, so, that's probably fair.
All right. And so when I hear that, and now you're aware of that, and you're kind of nodding in agreement there, that's what I would clean on.
Okay.
See, for me, inspirations are in every moment. I almost sometimes, I don't want to turn them off. I'm going to say this jokingly. But I almost want to be able to turn them off because they just keep coming in. I'll look around, and in every moment there is something that I could do or an idea that has just surfaced. And that's happening all the time. So I think it's happening to all of us. It's when we have the beliefs like, gee, I want to have more of them, or underlying that is probably the fear that they're not going to keep coming. Or what if it doesn't work? Or what if I don't get a Rolls-Royce mastermind kind of idea like Joe did? You know, that's when it's coming from fear. I think we really want to just be in the place where we're trusting each moment. One of the things I've been doing recently is just kind of taking a breath and asking, what does this moment want me to do? And I mean really going deep with that, not just on a surface level and saying, oh, yeah, I got to make this phone call or it's time for me to eat or I got to go work out or I got to go practice guitar or whatever. I want to go deeper than that. I want to look around and ask myself, okay, divinity, what do you want me to do right now in this moment? Which could be any of the things I just mentioned, or it could be something completely different, and I just get up and do it. This comes from that constant cleaning so that we keep removing the programming so we can feel the inspiration in each moment when it's knocking at our door.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Great questions. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
So, Jill, let me check in with you. This is Jack. It's about 8 minutes after 5 California time. We're scheduled to go to 5. I'm willing to go longer, but I don't know what your schedule is, and I want to honor
you. Oh, I can go a little longer. I'm so impressed with these people and these questions. I'm kind of curious, like, what else they got?
Well, we screened all these people when we went on the air, you know.
I see. Well, they had to type in their questions to you first?
No, I'm teasing. Okay, good. So if anyone has another question, we'll go for a few more minutes. Or not.
Might have done it right then and there.
I might have. But if you do have a question or you're rehearsing one or you're wondering if it's good enough, just clean on it and then go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Joe. I have a question in regards to your comment about your enthusiasm.
Sure.
Okay, and I guess the question that came to me was, could it not also be the possibility that your enthusiasm is your way to exhibit your personal connection with the divinity, and in such doing that, it actually draws more people to you so you can help them to see that it's a possibility?
I accept that answer. I like that one. I'll go with that. That makes total sense to me. I mean, I really do think that passion is the guiding light for all of us. It certainly has been for me. When people used to ask me a while back, how did you go from homeless to best-selling author, then you're in some movie, then you're on Larry King with Jack, and then you're, you know, doing all these teleseminars, they would all say, what's the one thing you did? What's the one book you read? What's the one seminar you went to? As if there was just the one magic pill. And I finally just said, you know, all I have done was follow what I was passionate about. I have simply followed my enthusiasms, if you will. And that has been guiding me to here, and apparently is still on fire and guiding me forward. So I love that answer, and I agree with it. Thank you.
You know, I'm sure you know this, Joe, but the word enthusiasm comes from the Greek entheos, theos,
yes,
meaning God, like theology.
Yeah.
So they say when you have enthusiasm, you're filled with God. So I think we're all in agreement.
I like it.
Yeah, good stuff. Any other questions?
Joe, this is Karen DeLuca. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I've got a question in regards to the 4 points of the phrase, which ultimately comes back to love. How would you tie that thought process back into the concept of gratitude, because isn't it really coming back to a point of being grateful and coming, because that's a point of coming from love? So how would you put the two together if you would at all?
That's a wonderful question. I guess I didn't say it on this call. I usually do say, when I'm talking about the four phrases and I get to thank you, I usually go on a little spill about how that leads to gratitude and how gratitude is the single most powerful, easiest thing we can do in any moment to transform that moment. I'm a big believer in gratitude. It's one of the things that changed my life when I started to quit complaining and started to look around and just be grateful for the obvious things that were there all along that I wasn't being grateful for. And I'm in at least one other movie, I think it's The Compass, where I tell this long story about being grateful for a pencil as a way to open up the window in me to be grateful for the rest of life. So saying thank you does all those things I said earlier about it's thanking the divine for taking care of the issue or the perception, and almost always it's just the perception we have that we're really erasing. But also it is tying into gratitude. It is going back to thank you in terms of for my life, in terms for this moment, in terms of this opportunity. Thank you for moving me into this space of reconnecting to divinity. So, yes, gratitude is a whole part of that compartment that goes with that phrase and is kind of a background feeling to all of these phrases, love and gratitude. You're exactly right.
Joe, can you do a 2-minute version of your pencil story? I think that is such an incredible story.
Oh, I didn't know. I don't think I knew you knew that, but okay.
I see you from afar, man. I love you.
Oh, thank you. I remember, you know, I mentioned being homeless and I was in poverty for a very long time when I was in Houston. Yet I was working on myself, and I'd go to the library and I'd read these personal development books, and I'd sneak into lectures, and I'd go to the Unity Church and Unitarian Science of Mind and Christian Science and whatever they'd let me into. And I kept hearing over and over and over again about being grateful. And I thought, yeah, right, I'll be grateful when I have a job or a relationship or a car or, you know, food. Just give me something to be grateful for. And so I was resisting it. And I kept hearing it over and over, and I finally said, okay, geez, let me try this thing. And I remember picking up a pencil, number two pencil, just a regular old, plain old yellow wooden pencil. And I looked at it and kind of flippantly said, yeah, okay, I can be grateful. I got a pencil. And then I thought, well, I guess I can write, you know, I can write the great American novel with a pencil. And I guess I can write a suicide note with a pencil. Yeah. And I can write a grocery list with a pencil. And I started to loosen up a little bit, going, wow, this is really a twig. And I'm able to change the world with a twig. I'm able to write with this pencil, and I can write a poem. I can write a song. I can write a love letter. I can write a romance novel. I can, you know, and my energy started to change. And then I looked at the other end of the pencil, and there's the eraser. And I go, God, what a brilliant invention. Because I don't want the suicide note, so let me erase that. And some of the grocery lists I probably already get, the milk or eggs or whatever was on the list at the time, and let me erase that. And suddenly I thought, whoever invented the pencil was a genius. My God, I can roll the earth, and if there's some things I did wrong, I can erase those parts. And I got excited, and I suddenly realized that, oh, my entire feeling was different. Just like it is now as I relive the memory and tell it, you know, a little theatrically, but I'm telling it for everybody, and I'm reliving it. And as I started to do that, I looked around in my room, and I was in a real, you know, I was in a room in a house and paying $200 a month, and a toilet was in the living room, which is where I was sitting. I mean, it was just, it was a dump. And I'm saying that in terms of how we would perceive it if you had walked in at that point. And so I started looking around going, wow, I got a roof over my head. And I'm in Texas, but there's an air conditioning in the wall. There's an air conditioner there. And I don't know if I had a computer, but I had a typewriter and I had something to write with. And it just opened me. I started to see that there were things that I had been really complaining about that now that the same guy's looking at them and nothing's really changed in the outside world. Nobody's published anything. Nobody's given me any money. Nobody's fed me. Nobody paid my rent. But suddenly I'm feeling gratitude. And from that moment, things started to expand. So in other words, I would see the opportunities from there, whether it was to write something. I started writing articles for the New Age magazines and East West Journal, and some of my early publications came after that. But I had to start with feeling gratitude, and I had to find a way to do that. And for me, it was to almost flippantly and skeptically pick up a pencil and dare it to work, and it did.
I love it. Well, we should probably start wrapping this up. Talk a little about your website and how people can find out more about your work and what resources you have. You said you had some new things coming out you're real excited about with Nightingale Conant and a book.
Yeah, I have a new audio program coming out called The Abundance Paradigm, and the subtitle is Moving from the Law of Attraction to the Law of Creation. And I will be promoting that on Friday, and it is a Nightingale Conant program. But I think since everybody's been talking about Zero Limits, if they don't know about the book Zero Limits, please go get it at Amazon or any of the favorite bookstores. I'm sure it's on Kindle and iPad and all that at this point, but I didn't check. And I do have a website for it. It's at zerolimits.info. And zerolimits.info has the famous story that circulated years ago, which was the seed for the whole Zero Limits book. And in fact, I remember, Jack, you wrote to me, you sent me an email one time and told me how that story transformed you, but at the same time, you said about 40 people had sent it to you.
True.
It was traveling across the internet. But ZeroLimits.info has the links to the different seminars I've done, like Zero Limits 3 was the final one Dr. Hulett and I did together and probably is the best of all of them. And that's on DVD, and there's a link to it. We've got audios from the first couple of them. And, of course, the book is all listed. So I would just say go to zerolimits.info and have fun.
Sounds like a good idea. Well, I want to thank you, Joe, for being on this call. It helped me. I'll just do one self-disclosure real quick. There's a guy named Genpo Roshi, who I think you met at the TLC. And he'd been doing these seminars called 5-5-50, five people for 5 days for $50,000 a person, making $250,000 in a week. And it was a real – when we met him over in Maui when he was doing that and thought, wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided we would do a workshop with him, and it's 4 days, and it's 20 people, and it's $15,000 a person. And I started reading people's application forms, what they wanted to get from the 4 days, and I started to run things in my head, like, oh, my God, are we going to deliver? Are they going to get enough? Am I good enough? And all this kind of stuff. And my wife and I were talking about that this morning, and here I am I'm going to clean on it tonight, and I thank you for that.
Oh, you know, the thing that we all want to remember, too, is whatever surfaces in our lives is what is there for us to clean on.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you just told me about this, Jack, I will be cleaning on this later.
Well, I appreciate that for you and for me. Well,
anyway, this is a great group of call, a great group of people, and a wonderful conversation. Jack, I love you, so I'm very honored that you've had me come on this call and give me a chance to talk about Zero Limits and do some cleaning.
Well, thanks for being on the call, and I love how our friendship is evolving. I look forward to seeing you hopefully in January at TLC. And for everyone
thanks,
else, we'll see you and talk to you on our next calls, and have a great evening and a great day wherever you are. Bye, everybody.
Godspeed to all of you. Bye-bye.
The lines are unmuted if people want to say good night and thank you and...
Good night, and thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.